Brian's got some handouts. There's a few people that ask online they asked me earlier today if the notes are going to be online. I did put them up just like 5 minutes before I came in here. There is two pages, and I neglected to put the second page up. That's more of a homework page, not so much a page we're going to be going over tonight, but we will cover that in future weeks. So if you're online after service, I'll upload the second page of that. So as of right now, there should be one available to you. So hopefully that's easy to get to. It was my first time being talked through how to upload stuff to our website, so hopefully it worked. Anyways, so this is going to be a 5-week series that we're going to do on financial stewardship, and I enjoy teaching. In general, I just enjoy teaching, but I really enjoy talking about finances, and I did this last year with Life Issues on Friday nights. I did a 3-part series, and so some of this will be similar to that. But I'm passionate about talking about finances, and I do think it's a topic that, just in general, I don't think people talk a whole lot about finances. I don't think maybe everyone learns about finances, when they're younger and when they should be learning about it. So I do hope that really, no matter what stage all of us are in, through this series, that we can take some stuff and apply it. We've got people probably at different physical ages in here and online, and I think there's probably different financial positions and things like that. Some of these things are going to be basic, and maybe you think, why are we talking about this? But we talk a lot about the basic things around here just in general to remind us and be a refresher and maybe to hear a different perspective on it. Some of the things maybe don't necessarily apply to everyone. Some of them will. So I've been praying that it's a blessing to everyone and that all of us can kind of get something from it. Every time Jason McGuire teaches in here, on a Wednesday night or something, he'll teach on, he's taught on marriage in here and kids and things like that. And he always has a disclaimer at the beginning that says he's talking about kids. He's like, my kids aren't perfect, so don't hold them to the standard. So my disclaimer for this is I'm not perfect at finances. I don't know everything about finances. I have spent a lot of time in banking, and I'll share some of my background, when it comes to finances, but I'm not perfect at doing any of this. We try to take the things that we know to apply and apply them the way that we're supposed to and kind of learn along the way. I do have a lot of gray hair in my beard, and on my head, I think, which I think is supposed to help you make, be a little more wiser, or maybe people perceive you to be a little more wise than when I didn't have all the gray hair. So hopefully that works in my benefit for once. But Brenda and I try to apply all the things that we're going to talk about. They are things that we've pretty much applied most of these things for most of our marriage, which has been a huge blessing. So hopefully it's a blessing to you guys. So as I mentioned, my background, so Brenda and I got married in 2006. And like a month after we got married, we moved to Phoenix. And we had a church out there, Mark Lockwood, Mark and Lisa, they had a church out there, and they actually discipled my parents back in the early 90s. So I grew up with them, and I grew up with their kids. And so when we got married, I always told Brenda, I've always wanted to live in Phoenix. I loved it out there when I visited as a kid. And so we got married, and we moved out to Phoenix, and we had a home church with Mark and Lisa. And within the first year or two of us being there, we went through a class called Financial Peace University. Some of you guys may have heard of that. It's a guy named Dave Ramsey. He's still on the radio. He's got a podcast. His business has exploded even since then. Back then it was on, we had CDs and, we watched DVDs of, the class every week for like nine or 13 weeks. And we had the audio CDs. We could re-listen to them in our car and stuff. And, of course that's been like 16 years ago now. So, we've taken kind of some of the things that he taught even then, and most of the stuff that we, heard then, we started applying then and really have tried to keep that the whole time. And so it made a big impact on our life and on our marriage and on our finances. And so a lot of the things that we're going to reference, I'm not going to teach his material or anything like that, but I'll reference like some statistics that his organization puts out and some quotes. I listen to his podcast still pretty regularly. So, a lot of the things that he says, a lot of sayings that he has, I may throw some of those in here. So from him or his team, he's got a whole team of people now that teach, but so a lot of our stuff came from there. But around the time that we went through that Financial Peace University class, I also started working at Chase Bank. And I worked there for about 5 years doing just personal banking and did that for a while. And then we moved back from Phoenix to Kansas City in 2012, and I started working at Commerce Bank, and I worked there up until February of 2020. And so I had about 12 years of banking experience, and so I learned a lot about just the way people handle their finances and, you know, what that kind of stuff looks like, and learned, you know, what to do, what not to do, you know, learned about different banking products and things like that. So we'll talk about some of that stuff through this series, but I've seen both ends of the spectrum as far as, you know, financial. I mean, I've seen, you know, people that are in their 70s or 80s that are barely scraping by, that are, you know, behind paycheck to paycheck. They're not, if they were living paycheck to paycheck, they would feel great, because they're so far, you know, they're in debt. They can't, like, keep their head above water, and they can't work. They're too old, or they're disabled, or they're, you know, and they're just financially destitute. I've seen people like that. I've seen, you know, people that are making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year and got hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars in their bank account. I've seen kind of all of that through my time in banking. And, so I know, even in just in this room, we'll have, you know, a spectrum, as well. And so, so I know that, you know, not everything applies to everybody, but the basics apply, you know, whether you've got a lot or not a lot. And so hopefully some of that will come through. So in 2020, when I left Commerce Bank, I started working here at the church. And I've been working in the office for just about 4 years now. So if you guys don't know, I do all the church finances, and, I've always liked spreadsheets and numbers and things like that. I'm not like a, you know, guru with math or anything, but I've always just kind of liked those nerdy things about, finances. And so, you know, I don't think you have to be nerdy necessarily or like those kinds of things in order to be able to do your finances, but that probably helps a little bit and helps apply some of the things that we learned. And so so throughout this series, I'm hopeful that I can share good and bad experiences that Brenda and I have had. I'll hopefully share things that maybe also apply to you guys. Like I said at the beginning, I don't think finances is something that we talk like openly about very often. And so so I do want to kind of share some personal stories along the way that maybe can help, just because it's not something we always talk about. So Brenda and I don't agree on every single thing all the time. We're not, you know, perfect when it comes to our finances. But I will say that I really don't remember a time that we weren't on the same page, at least with our goals when it comes to our finances. You know, there's been purchases that I've made, purchases that she made that, you know, maybe the other one was like, that's a stupid purchase. Why are we buying this thing? You know, fill in the blank. But overall, we've been on the same page. And I think if you're married here tonight, it's super important to be on the same page with your spouse. And so, yeah, we'll talk a lot about how to get on the same page, the importance of being on the same page, what happens when we're not on the same page. All those kinds of things. It used to be that the number one cause of divorce in America was money. If you Google what's the number one cause of divorce in America, there's like 50 different things that come up. I don't know if it's money or not, but it is a big problem, just in general, people not being on the same page with their finances. And we'll look at kind of the reasons for that and how that goes beyond just, you know, oh, I don't think we should buy this. It's not really just that. That's the symptom. That's not really the problem, and it goes deeper than that. And so we'll look at that throughout this study, and just the importance of being on the same page with your spouse. I just really can't overstate how important that is. And so so the series is called Financial Stewardship, as you can see on the screen. I want to start off by just defining what that is. You'll have blanks along the way on your page. So the Christian Stewardship Network. I thought that'd be a good place to go for a stewardship definition. They say biblical financial stewardship refers to responsible and faithful management of the financial resources that God has entrusted us with. It recognizes that everything we have ultimately belongs to God and that we are called to use our financial blessings wisely for His purposes and His glory, or in glory. So that's really what we're going to use kind of as our baseline. As far as what is having good financial stewardship, it's recognizing that the money is not ours, right? God has trusted us with it, and we should be responsible and we should be faithful as we manage those resources. And ultimately, those should be for His honor and His glory. And so I think in this church, we probably understand that better than a lot of people, but I do think it's important to talk about what that is, so we're all on the same page. So I found this article from Forbes. The title of the article is The Bible, the Ultimate Financial Guide. And they say that the topic of money and finances is mentioned quite a lot in the Bible. Does anybody have a guess on how many times, not just the word money, but the topic of money and finances shows up in the Bible? 4,682. Belinda, what do you got? 1,500? Anybody else? 30? 1,000? Is that what you said? 2,000? What did you say? Jamie with one. $1, Bob, $1. So the answer is more than 800 times. So I guess the $1 you win with that one. I think everyone else is over 800. Oh, you said 30. That's right. That's right. Steve had you with 30. Should have gone 31, Jamie. They said it's actually, if you include all the references to like possessions and things like that, it actually goes up over 2,000. So if you guys are guessing closer to 2,000, that's your consolation prize. But it is the second most referenced topic in the entire Bible. So more than salvation, more than eternal security, more than discipleship. It's more than all of those things. It's mentioned more than all of those things. I'm not saying that your money is more important than those things, so let me be clear. But it is mentioned more than that. Does anybody have a guess on what the most talked about topic in the Bible is? Love. Yes, good job. So love is the most referenced topic in the Bible. And so what we can gather from that, the reason I mention that, is when God talks about something a lot, we should take notice of that. It's important. I never can really overstate the fact that, like, none of us know anything about God that isn't contained in this book. I mean, of all the things, and I put this verse on the screen, John 21:25, it's the very last verse of the book of John. It says, "And there are also many other things which Jesus did, the which, if they could be written every one, I suppose that even the world itself could not contain the books that should be written. Amen." And so, if you think about all the things that could be said about God, God is omnipresent. He is omniscient. He is omnipotent, right? He's everywhere, all-powerful, all-knowing. And of all the things that he could have, like, left for us or given us so we can know about him, about how to live our life, about eternal security, about salvation, about the end times, about the Old Testament, about the New Testament, it's all in this one relatively small book. You know, I mean, there's bigger, you know, fiction books out there than this. And so the more that you think about the God of the universe decided that everything we needed to know about him would be in this one book. And then to think about the thing he spoke about the most being love. Of course, obviously that's a huge theme throughout our Bible. God so loved the world, right? Even lost people know that verse. But the second most important thing, or the most talked about thing, is finances. And, you know, why is that? Why does God spend so much time? I mean, wouldn't it have been better for us, at least from my perspective, wouldn't it be better if he gave us more information about what it's going to be like in heaven? Or what you guys are going through Revelation, if you're in here on Wednesday nights right now. Wouldn't it be great if we had a little bit more information about the book of Revelation? There's so much stuff there, and there's so many things that we, you know, can read about and can kind of meditate on and think about what it's going to be like. But there's so many, like, blanks that it would have been helpful maybe that if God would have just filled this in. But, you know, God knows more than I do, and God chose to put these words in the Bible. And so when you think about that, and you think about it in that perspective, that we only have the Bible to know everything we need to know about God, it gives us, if you revisit that idea of, okay, 800 times he talked about it, you know, I think he wants us to know how to handle our money. I think he wants us to know, or, you know, that's an important part of living our life. Like, that's a very practical thing. Yeah, I mean, salvation is super practical, right? I mean, for the, you know, when you accept Christ as your Savior, that's a huge decision. That's the most important decision you can make. And there's a lot of important things that are talked about in the Bible. But as far as, like, a daily, like, living it out, think about, like, where, you know, money kind of infiltrates all areas of our life, right? It is something that we deal with on a daily basis. And so it is something that you know, in order to live and be more Christ-like and to live a life that honors and glorifies God, we need to portray love, and we need to be able to handle our finances. amongst all the other things, right? And, you know, it's important to be a disciple. It's important to read our Bible. It's important to have a good prayer life and all those things. I don't want to minimize those things at all, but I just found it interesting how often, how frequently, that it shows up, because it plays such a huge role, really in all aspects of our life. And so we're not going to look at all 800 of these references to money and possessions. I don't think we could get through all of those even in the 5 weeks that we have allotted. So we're not going to look at all those, but I want to pull out some just principles, and we'll look at, you know, we'll look at the Bible every week. You know, this is a church, and we're a Bible believing church. So we're obviously going to use the Bible. But I do want to be pretty practical, with this. And so, as I mentioned already, like, we don't, as a society, we don't talk about money a lot. Some people grow up in a household where money isn't talked about, like, at all. Some people grow up in a household where it is talked about, but it's negative. Like, you know, we never have any, and, you know, it's really stressful, and dad's got to work extra, or mom's got to get a job, and, you know, this and this. And sometimes, you know, when we get into middle school and high school, it's a lot more prevalent now where they actually are teaching some level of financial, you know, literacy class or some kind of personal finance class. But did anybody in here, raise your hand if you took a financial class, like, in high school, like a personal finance class? Okay, so that's like maybe a quarter-ish of us ago, or a quarter of us took it. I did not take any personal finance classes. I had an accounting class, but that was more like, you know, how to balance the books and more business accounting, not so much personal finance. But it is being taught a lot more prevalently now, which is a good thing. I mean, but most of us, so if a quarter of us took a class in high school, three quarters of us didn't take a class in high school, right? And we just kind of learned as we went. And some of you that took it in high school probably didn't pay close attention or really, like, studiously apply all the things that you did learn. And so you still had to learn it the hard way, because that's how most of us go through high school. That's how I went through high school anyways. And so, you know, we go through life and we just kind of have to figure things out along the way, and we have to figure out what works for us. And a lot of times we go into it without a plan, and we just kind of stumble into stuff. And so that's one of the things that I think is important when we're talking about finances, to think about and talk about just how important it is to have conversations. If you have kids, you know, age-appropriate, you know, conversation. You don't need to tell your three-year-old all about your budget. But, you know, having appropriate conversations with your kids about money. You know, like, kids need to know there's not an infinite amount, right? Kids don't really get that concept until they get a little older. But they need to know, like, we don't just have endless money. Money doesn't grow on trees. How many people's parents said that to them when they were kids? You know, it's true. Money doesn't grow on trees. I mean, we don't have an infinite amount of it. We really need to manage what we have, manage the money that we do have well. And so, even just within your own relationship with your spouse, if you're married, finances is kind of a hard topic to talk about sometimes. It can be, you know, shameful if you've had issues with money in the past, or maybe you brought a lot of debt into the marriage, or maybe the other person brought a lot of debt and you don't want to bring it up, and it's kind of awkward, and she has her account, I have my account, or, you know, maybe it's just, I don't know anything about finances. I don't really even, I mean, you know, I want to talk about finances because I know it's important, but I don't have anything to contribute, and I don't want to look foolish in front of my husband or my wife. You know, maybe it's that, you know, I don't really want to invest the time that it's going to take to, like, get this under control. We're years into our marriage now, and, like, we've just kind of been winging it this whole time, and I don't really know how I'm supposed to, like, put a stop in here and, like, let's actually figure out what the plan is. You know, maybe that's why we don't bring it up. Maybe one spouse has, you know, these really strong opinions one way, and the other spouse has strong opinions the other way, and I don't want to get in a fight about this. And there's a lot of reasons why like, married couples don't talk about their money. And so I want to, hopefully through this class, it will give you something to discuss after the class is over with your spouse. But I do want to give some, like, practical things. The second page of that handout is a budget, which we'll talk more about later. But that should be something that you work on together. And so Dave Ramsey always talks about, there's usually in most relationships, there's a nerd and there's a free spirit is how he describes them. The nerd person is like, you know, the person that's super interested in spreadsheets and numbers, and they like looking over statements and figuring stuff out, and they get comfort from these numbers, and, you know, they like manipulating the things. And so that person, you know, if you're married, you probably have that person in your your marriage. And then the free spirit person, generally speaking, is a little more, you know, I don't really want to deal with all that. I don't want to look at it. You tell me how much I can spend and I'll spend that. And they're more interested in let's have fun. And the nerdy person is not as much fun. And Brenda and I's relationship on certain topics, one of us is nerdy and the other one's the free spirit, and other topics it's flip-flop. So we're kind of like a hybrid, I guess, in between there. Maybe you are too. But in general, you know, like I have the more nerdy personality when it comes to the finances than Brenda. That being said, some years of our marriage, you know, she was doing more of the budgeting than I was. So we kind of taken turns on that. But just discussing it, having an open like dialogue about finances. Communication is key, obviously, in a lot of aspects of your marriage, all aspects of your marriage. But when it comes to finances, it can be really difficult for people sometimes to like open up and talk about finances for a variety of different reasons. And so so hopefully this class will give you at least a starting place of where you can begin with from that. So I need a water bottle. Babe, can you hear me, water bottle? So we're talking about financial stewardship, and so I do want to also clarify, what is a steward? What is a word that's on your thing, I think? What is another word for steward that we would use today? Manager, yes. Steward is a manager. Okay, so somebody who manages something for somebody else. Thank you. So I already told you, I run the office here at the church. So I'm a steward for HBF. When the offering gets collected and the ushers take care of it and they take it to the bank, on Monday mornings I go up there and we count the money. You know, we make sure we document everything. We make the deposit. I come back to the church. I input it all into the system. I make sure that it tracks to the, you know, to the right people, and I make sure that gets entered correctly. I'm the one who pays all of the bills here at the church. I'm the one that, you know, prepares the reports for the board when the board meets and you know, when they're setting up the budget, when they're, you know, making those kinds of decisions. I don't make those decisions. I don't decide who gets to spend what, or I don't decide which, you know, bills get to be paid or have to be paid. I'm the one who processes all of those things. I'm the one who gets your purchase orders, and I'm the one who, you know, cuts the checks and all that. But I don't sign the checks. I don't make the decisions on the budget. I don't get to be the one that does all of those things. I'm a steward, right? I take the money. I receive the money at the bank. I pay the money out when the bills come due. But when I cut the check for the church's mortgage or our utility bills or, you know, these thousands of dollars a month that our church sends to missionaries all over the place, when I cut all those checks, it doesn't hurt me at all. I don't even blink. I'm cutting, you know, thousands of dollars of checks to all these missionaries. If I was writing those checks from my own bank account, that would hurt, right? I mean, it would be great if I had the money to do that, but, I would feel that a little bit. You know, if you're writing $1,000 check or $5,000 check, I mean, you're going to feel that a little bit. But when I do it for the church, I don't even feel it at all. It doesn't bother me at all. I print the checks out. They come, you know, the signers come in, they sign the checks. I put them in the mail them off, and that's it. I mean, it doesn't really impact me because it's not my money, right? It's the church's money. Ultimately, it's God's money, but that money doesn't belong to me. I don't see it as my own money. Same thing when I worked at the bank. I would handle hundreds of thousands of dollars of cash on a weekly basis. I mean, people would come in with huge deposits, or at one point I was in charge of the ATM, so I was pulling the ATM every week, and you know, you got $50,000, $100,000 in $20 bills that you're counting and sorting, and they're all crumpled up because people just shove them in the machine, you know. So I've handled tens of millions of dollars of cash. I don't even know how much, but it was all just like Monopoly money. It doesn't feel like my money because it isn't my money, right? That belongs to the bank, or that belongs to the customer, or that belongs to the church in this case. And so when you look at your money that way, that the money isn't mine, it's God's. I'm just managing it. If we can get that, that view on our bank account, right? When I look at my bank account, Do I look at that bank account as this is God's money, or do I look at it as if it's my money? If it's my money, then I'm going to be a little more emotionally attached to it, right? It's going to be a little bit more difficult for me to part with some of that. It's going to be a little bit more painful when I have to write that mortgage check, or when I have to pay that car payment, or when I pay the insurance payment, or me and Steve were just talking today about property taxes. When you write that check, you know, it's like, you know, every year this keeps coming around. You know, when you write those checks, it's a little bit grievous. And we were talking about how it seems like it just keeps going up, right? Everything keeps going up. When you write those checks, or you swipe that card, or you pay it online, or however you're doing your payments, when you do those things, you feel it a little bit, because it's like, well, now I can't spend that money on that motorcycle I wanted, or that lawnmower, or that we're building a house, so it's all house stuff for us, a shed, or, you know, I can't spend that money everywhere, right? I can only spend it once. But if we look at the money as this bank account is money that God has blessed us with, and he expects us to do, like, wise things with it. Like, he expects us to do the things that we're supposed to do with that. What are the things we're supposed to do with that? Well, there's a lot of things that we could do with it, but if we're going to be a faithful steward, we're not going to grow that emotional attachment. We're not going to view it as ours and get really possessive of it. That verse in Luke 16:10, I think it was 2 years ago or maybe 3 years ago now. Time seems like it flies, but our vision conference, this was the theme verse a couple years ago. He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much, and he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. And that verse does not mean that if you give God all of your money to the church or to a missionary or to some other nonprofit organization, it does not mean that God's just going to reimburse you for all of that, right? This is not a prosperity gospel. I'm not saying that if you faithfully give to God that God's just going to, you know, cut you a check for the difference or reimburse you for what you've spent. But if you were God, if you were looking down at all of your, you know, varying degrees of servants, faithful, unfaithful, everywhere in between, it makes sense that you would trust somebody who's been faithful with what they have to be faithful with more. If you were God and you were looking to bless somebody with something, you would probably choose the faithful servant over the person that you just perceive as, you know, they have no idea what's going on. They have no clue where all the money's going. I don't know. I don't know how much I make. I don't know how much I spend. As long as there's money in my bank account and I can run by the gas station or the drive-through on the way home or whatever, then I'm good. You know, God's going to bless those people who are more faithful. And so I should have probably mentioned this earlier on. This is obviously we're a church, and obviously when you talk about money in church, most of the time it's you need to give, right? Tithing is so important. And if you're not giving, you're not obedient and all of those things. And that is totally true. And I do 100% agree with that. This series though is not, it's not my intention to beat anybody up over tithing. I will talk about tithing just because, it is a function of my life, and I'm going to be sharing, you know, a lot of like just personal finance stuff with you guys from my own life. So it's going to come up, but if you're tithing or if you're not tithing or whatever, please don't perceive anything I'm saying that like, you know, you really need to start giving. That is not the point of what I'm talking about, at all. So I don't want it to come across that way. Open up your Bibles to Matthew chapter 25. We'll spend just a few minutes in this story we're all familiar with, but a couple weeks ago we had Pastor Tom Gang here. You guys, if you were here on a Sunday morning, you heard him, but we also had him here on the day before on Saturday for all the approved disciples. We had a discipleship luncheon, and he came in and talked to all the disciples, and we do that every year just to make sure, you know, that we're all, you know, getting the basics of discipleship. You know, every time we have one, the people talk about a lot of the same thing. It's like, you know, we need to be making disciples, the importance of making disciples, investing the word of God one-on-one with somebody else into faithful men or women that they may invest that into another faithful person, right? That's the idea of discipleship. And at this church, that's a lot, you know, that's at the core of who we are. So anyway, so Tom comes in and he's talking about, you know, the importance of discipleship and how disciples multiply, and he had this cool chart on, if you just shared the gospel with this person and you invested for a year into this person, and how it multiplies and how it's different than addition. And so he went over all this stuff, and I'm like, I've heard all of this stuff, but every time you hear it, it's like, it's a really good reminder. I need to be out sharing the gospel with people, right? So that I have somebody to disciple. We and Brenda are blessed with disciple and Cody and Taylor right now, but we're almost done, right? I'm looking for another disciple. Yeah, fingers crossed. Eventually we're going to finish. I want another disciple. Like I want somebody else to invest in. And so I'm like, well, who's that going to be? And I don't think there's anybody like waiting for a disciple right now. And so as he's talking, it's like, well, maybe you should go share the gospel with people and they'll hear it and you can disciple them, right? Like that's the whole idea of discipleship. So just my point is just hearing some of these basic things, even though almost everything he said was something I had heard before, but being reminded of it is always good. And so in Matthew chapter 25, starting in verse, should have written it down. There it is, verse 14. For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country who calleth his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded the same, and made them other 5 talents. And likewise, he that had received 2, he also gained other 2. But he that received 1 went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoneth with them. And so he that had received 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 5 talents. Behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more. His Lord said unto him, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of the Lord. He also that had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 2 talents. Behold, I have gained 2 other talents beside them. His Lord said unto him, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of the Lord, of thy Lord. Then he which had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew that thou art an hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid, and went and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, there thou hast, that is thine. His Lord answered and said unto him, thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not, and gather where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury. Take therefore the talent from him, and give it unto him which hath 10 talents. For every one that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance. But from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath. And cast ye the unprofitable servant into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Okay, so Jesus tells this story of these servants, right, that were given a talent, given some money, and the master left, and these stewards were supposed to be wise, faithful stewards, right? And they even knew it because the guy, the one that did nothing with it, the one that buried it because he was afraid, said, I knew you were a hard man and that you would have wanted to see this money grow, basically is what he tells him. And he's like, well, if you knew that, like, why didn't you do what you knew you were supposed to do with the money that you were supposed to do with it, right? And so, he goes through these 3 different men, and he ends up taking the one from the guy who just buried it in the ground, right? And he gives it to the one that already had the most. And it's like, I mean, when you first read that, it's like, I mean, he did keep the one safe. Like, at least he didn't lose it or spend it frivolously, right? At least he protected it and he had it ready to give back to him. Like, now he's taking it away and giving it to the guy that already has a lot. Like, the other guy has a lot already. Why does he need this? But it's this principle of faithful with least, faithful with much, right? If we're faithful with the little things that God gives us, we're going to be faithful with the bigger things that God gives us. And that can be money and what we're talking about. It does definitely influence our finances. And but it can be with anything, right? If you're faithful with your time, I was just talking with somebody about this this evening. And the way that we budget and spend our time, a lot of times when we think about budgets, we think about it from a financial perspective. And we will talk a decent amount about budgets tonight, but we also have a budget for our time, right? All of us have, with money, we have varying degrees, right? Some of us make more, some of us make less. But with time, we all have the same. Maybe not total years, but I mean in a day, we all have the same, right? We all have 24 hours, and we get to choose every day what we're going to do with it. How are we going to budget our time? Are we going to be faithful with the least of these things, and God's going to bless us with more? Maybe that is longer life. Maybe that is just, you know, where we feel like, man, I have extra time. How many would like prefer to have a little bit of extra time on their plate or some extra money? Like, I'd be happy with either one of those things, right? A little bit of extra time or a little bit of extra money. Those would all be great things. But we got to be faithful with the little things. Like, I teach the youth. Most of you guys know that. And I'm constantly telling them, I mean, almost every time I'm teaching, read your Bible and pray, right? I mean, those are like the most basic fundamental things as Christians that we need to hear and that we need to do. But like, how many of us miss days reading? How many of us miss prayer time? How many of us, you know, are not as faithful with those things as we should be? But yet we hear them all the time. If you come to this church, you're hearing, you got to be reading your Bible. You got to be in the Bible daily. If you talk to Brian about prayer at all, he'll like put you to shame on, you know, wow, the other day I was praying over, you know, some other church because I just, you know, felt led. And I'm like, man, I'm having a hard time remembering to pray for my own family sometimes. Like, he's praying over, you know, he's got all these different lists of people he's praying for. But, you know, be faithful with the least. Be faithful. If you can only, you know, if you can only read your Bible for, you know, 15 minutes, well, read your Bible faithfully for 15 minutes. If you have a little bit more time on your hands, read for more or pray for more or whatever. But when we're faithful with the little things, financially, with our time, with just anything in life, God's going to bless us with more. If you're faithful in ministry, if you guys are involved in ministry, you know, well, all I do is, you know, mow, or all I do is mop the floors, or all I do is dot, dot, dot. I remember, I think it was, I don't know if it was the very first time that Pastor Bob Hall preached from the pulpit or not. It's probably been, I don't know, 10 years ago or something. But I remember he gets up here and he's preaching on Sunday morning, and he talks about how, you know, I remember when I was just up here vacuuming the stage because I was part of one of these cleaning teams, and never did I ever think that I'd be up here behind the pulpit preaching. And he's like, I just knew I was supposed to be vacuuming, so I was vacuuming. And, you know, that's been probably a decade ago. I still remember that. And you hear these stories of people that, you know, don't have the most glamorous ministry role or whatever. But just be faithful with where you're at. Whatever you can do, wherever you can serve, however you can serve the Lord, serve the Lord. If you've been blessed with a job that pays you a great salary, well, great. You can give that to the Lord. That's awesome. If you haven't been blessed with as much money, but you have some free time, give some time to the Lord. Like, you know, God's going to bless if we're faithful, with the little things, wherever that may be. So, also if you're, you know, like a baby Christian, you just recently have gotten saved, all this is kind of new to you, be faithful with the things that you know, right? If you know you're supposed to, you know, hey, after I've got saved, I know I'm supposed to get baptized. I've heard about baptism. Well, then get baptized. And if you've been baptized, what's this discipleship thing everyone talks about? You know, like all of us have these steps, and just be faithful with the things that you know. Okay, so God takes this story of these talents and these people who are faithfully investing and faithfully doing things, and God tells them, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." And there's parallels in this passage, obviously, to to eternity and to the judgment seat and all of that. But isn't that what we all want to hear? I mean, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Like that is what I would like to have. That's what I would like to hear from the Lord when I meet him, right? Face to face. I want to hear, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Well, the Bible tells you, how are you going to do that? Be faithful with the little things. Do the things you're supposed to do. Do the basics. Once you learn a little bit more than the basics, start doing those things, and you'll start, you know, God will start blessing you with more things. And so, I think the next thing on your handout, the next blanks, what does someone who is faithful with their finances look like? The blanks are have a plan. I don't know about all of you guys. I've not always been the most intentional person. Probably 4 or 5 years ago, I'd been leading the youth ministry for a year or two, and this word just kept coming up. Be intentional, have intentionality, like do things with a purpose. And that was kind of like my mantra for that year. Is just, I mean, it's easy to go through life and just kind of let things happen to you. You kind of make your way through and you figure it out as you go. But there is so much value in having a plan just in any area of your life, whether it's your finances, whether it's your family, whether it's your job, like what's your career track look like? What are you going to do with your life? you know, whatever area of your life, if you don't have a plan, if you guys were, whenever I was a teenager, I still remember in my, like my sixth grade, maybe it was my seventh grade, we had an agenda, like a spiral bound agenda for the whole year. And, you know, you had all your days in there. You could write your homework assignments and stuff in there. That's what you're supposed to do with it anyways. I didn't always write those in there, but on the front or maybe inside the front cover, it had this quote, and most of you guys have probably heard it. If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. Yes. That there's a lot of truth in that. These little, you know, something from when I was 12 or 13 years old, this quote, if you don't have a plan, then you're planning to fail, right? If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And, man, there, from my time in banking and just, you know, times that I've met with people and counseled on different things, and from the times I've taught this material, that, you know, the idea of having a plan with your money, for some reason, so many people just don't have a plan. I just try to look into statistics about how many people are budgeting and stuff like that. And there's, I mean, I saw statistics as low as like 20%, and I saw some that were like 85% of Americans budget. And I'm like, well, okay, probably somewhere in the middle, you know, I mean, but, I think it also depends kind of on your idea of budgeting. What is a budget? I think there's probably a variety of definitions for what a budget is. But as I mentioned before, if you're married, you should be budgeting with your spouse. You don't necessarily have to sit down and both of you guys pore over the numbers. If one of you is more interested in that or more, you know, gifted in that area or experienced or whatever, that person can kind of do the grunt work you know, maybe make out the budget the way that they think it should be. And then you go show the other person, hey, here's what I think we should do with this. Here's what I've come up with so far. What do you think about this? You know, and then get some feedback and, all right, wow. Man, you gave me $150 to budget for groceries. Have you been to the grocery store? No, I don't do the shopping. You know, you do the shopping, and I have no idea what it costs. Well, $150 isn't going to go very far, so I'm going to need a lot more than that. Well, where's it going to come from? I got to take it from somewhere else now. And then you have those conversations, and you kind of figure it out. But most of the people that I've encountered in my years of banking, did not do a monthly budget. I think probably if I went around and just asked all of you guys, how much do you make in a paycheck or in a month or in a year? I think probably most of you guys could be within, you know, a few dollars as far as what your paychecks are. I know there's commissions and bonuses and there's some variation and stuff, but most of us pretty much know what we make on a given week or paycheck or month or however you get paid. Most of us probably know that. If I went around and asked, how much is your rent or your mortgage? I think probably most of us would know exactly how much our rent or our mortgage is. How much are your utility bills? Oh, they're about this much. They fluctuate, you know, whatever. How much is your cell phone? How much is your whatever? Like some of those basic bills, I think probably most of us could answer those questions. Even if we're not like super detailed with our finances, maybe we don't do a budget. I think probably most of us could answer some of those questions. But then if I said, okay, how much did you spend in the month of February eating out at restaurants? I mean, how many of you guys would know that number exactly? Don't have to raise your hand for that, but how many of you guys would know that number? How much did you spend on groceries? How much did you spend on just fun stuff? How much money did you blow at a gas station or a casino or a whatever? I don't know, whatever your thing is. Home Depot. How much money did you spend at Home Depot this month? If you start asking some more of those kind of questions, it's like, man, it could be $100. It could be $1,000. I don't have no idea. You know, I don't know how much I spend on those things. If you don't have a budget or you don't have a plan, then, you know, you're not going to know some of those figures. And I don't mean that you have to just like walk around thinking about your money all the time and thinking about how much you spent on things. But, you know, you should have kind of an idea of where the money, how much money is coming in, how much money is going out, how much of this stuff is, you know, necessary stuff that I'm taking care of my household, right? I mean, if you were to go look through my bank account, you would see tithing, you would see savings, you would see paying my mortgage, you'd see my utilities, you'd see me taking care of all of those things, but you'd see some Amazon charges, and you'd see some subscriptions, and you'd see some, you know, gaming stuff for my kids on Xbox Live, and you know, you'd see like other frivolous things. I'm not saying that you can't have any fun with your money. You should do things that you want. You shouldn't just only take care of your needs, but if you don't budget and take care of like the plan, you don't have a plan for how you're going to take care of your needs and your wants, then you might not have enough money to take care of your needs because it might have all gone to once before the needs come up, you know? I mean, like if you get your bill in the mail and you go look at your bank account and you don't have enough money to pay that because you already spent it on something that was not necessary, but now you got this bill that's due that you need to pay because it is a necessity, then you're kind of in a pinch. And so I think I have a thing on there that says what words come to mind. It's in a box. That's a homework assignment. You don't have to do that right now. But like when you hear the word budget, so I don't know where my – I think it was – was it Lincoln? Yeah, I think it was Lincoln. When he was like, I don't know, maybe four or five, we would, you know, we'd talk about the budget. We'd say the word budget, and he'd be like, that's a bad word. And I don't know where he got that from, because never in our marriage has budget been a bad word, or we never have this like negative connotation of budget. But for some reason, he just had it in his mind. Every time he heard the word budget, that's a bad word. And I do think that that is probably how most people look at budgeting. The people that I've talked to about, you know, doing a budget, sitting down and coming up with a plan, most people hear the word budget, and you can write down your own answers to what word comes to mind or what words come to mind. But, you know, stress and anxiety and shame and not knowing and fear and, you know, excitement is probably not going to make your list, I'm guessing, unless you're a weirdo. Most people are going to be like bad things. Like you think of the word budget, you think restrictive, or you think I can't spend anything, or you think of a fight because your spouse you're about to get in a fight if you talk about budgets. There could be a lot of like negative things that can be thought about with budgeting, but I think that it comes down to really more of a perspective shift on what a budget is. So the way that Dave Ramsey talks about the budget, the way that we've kind of always talked about the budget is it's just a plan. You're being intentional. You sit down at the end of the month before, that's another one of those like, you know, that you should do every month. We sometimes ours is like the fifth of the month before we actually sit down and do it. But we do the budget. We sit down and we say, okay, this month we made $5,000 or whatever the amount is. Okay, we got our mortgage. Write that in. We got our, you know, electric bill. Write that down. We got our insurance. We got our cell phone. We got our car payment. We got our credit cards. We got our this. We got our that. You start writing it down and, you know, you just make a list of the things. And usually, I think probably most of us, maybe all of us, if we just took care of the necessities, if we just wrote down, the needs that we have, our cars and our house and our utilities and our food, if we just wrote down the basics, I think probably most all of us would have money left over at the end of that, right? I mean, most of us can cover our necessities. But the problem is we look at, oh, well, eating out, that's a necessity because food's a necessity. But, well, eating out's not a necessity, right? You don't have to be eating out all the time. You can eat at home. That's a little cheaper. Maybe you don't need the car payment that's $500. Maybe you, you know, save up for a few months and you buy an old junky car, right? I just, like, we're in the midst of building a house. A lot of you guys know that. In the month of December, I found out that my car that I had for the last few years, that the engine, you know, has a failure or something in it that, you know, it may, that particular model and make and year of car may have an engine failure. You know, it could happen now, it could happen 5 years from now, we don't know, but at some point the engine's going to fail. This was in December. In January, the engine failed. I was like, we are in the middle of building the house. Excuse me. We're in the middle of building the house. You know, we don't really, I mean, the money that we're saving, we're trying to spend on house stuff. We're trying to do something else with it. I don't have the money to be spending on a new car right now. And the decision that we made, Brenda and I made, I don't know, 15 years ago, is we don't borrow money for anything. With the exception of a home, we do borrow for a house. But besides that, we don't borrow for anything. We haven't had a credit card in 15 years. We don't have a car loan, never have had since then. We just don't borrow money for anything. And so we're like, well, like the car is done. Like the engine has failed. I need a car. She needs a car. Like we both have jobs. We need to be able to get around. So we had a little bit of money, and we were able to scrap that car, and we were able to scrape together like a few thousand dollars to buy the car that I have now. Okay, it's not my favorite car. It's not as good as my other car was, but it doesn't have any payments on it. It's fairly inexpensive for insurance and gas and those things, and it'll get me through for a year or 2 years or whatever, and I'll upgrade eventually, and that's what we'll do next. But my point is, like, when we're looking at our budget, like, we look at transportation. That's a need. You got to get to work, right? You got to get your kids to school, or you got to get your kids to their activities, or you got to get to church. You got to get All of us got to get somewhere, doctor's appointments, I don't know, wherever you go. So transportation is a need, and we don't live in a place that we can just hop on a subway or we can easily get a cheap mode of transportation. So So we have to have a car. And so, but the, it doesn't have to be a $500 car payment car or a $1,000 car payment. I heard a stat that recently that like the average car payment in America is like over $800 a month, which is like ridiculous. That's just so expensive for cars. But people look at it, well, I need a car. I got to get a car. I was forced into getting this car. My engine in my car blew. I had to get a new car. And so I went to the dealership and I bought a new car, brand new car, you know, and now I'm stuck with this big old payment. And then they, you know, then they lament about it for the next 5 years while they pay it off, or 7 years, or however long their payment is. And, you know, that when we talk about the necessities and we need the transportation, it doesn't have to be flashy. Same thing with all of our expenses, right? I mean, rent and mortgage, you know, you don't have to have the nicest house. And I don't have any problem with you having a nice house. Jason's building me a nice house right now. So, you know, I don't have any problems with people having nice things, but sometimes we look at our budget and we look at our needs and we think, well, that's a need. Well, really it's a want. And we kind of just categorize it as a need because it falls into one of these buckets. But if you were to sit down and you were to write out your budget and you were to fill in all the actual needs that you have, most all of us could come up with extra money left over. And that money can be used for whatever we want. You know, it could be, you know, I'm not saying you have to be like a, I don't know the word, curmudgeon is the word that comes to mind, but that's probably not the right word. You know, like you don't have to be like a hermit who just doesn't do anything fun and can't spend any money and all that. Like, you know, we should have fun with our money. We should do things with our money. But we just need to make sure that we're taking care of the necessities first. And really the only way you can do that is if you have a plan, and whether it's written down, or we started using an online budget tool now so we can both see it from our phones. So it's not just on a piece of paper at home. You know, we actually both have access to it. But whatever works for you. You know, if you're single, it makes it a lot easier because you're the one that's in charge of the budget and you're the only one that can mess it up. If you're married, you know, one of you kind of sets it up and you hopefully you both sit down and agree with it. And then both of you could mess it up, or, you know, hopefully you both work on it and stick to it. But making a budget, sitting down, talking about it, I think you'd be surprised how freeing that can be. How, like, when you sit down and look at it, I mean, you might think this is going to be a mess. If we sit down and look at this, I don't even want to open, you know, that's like in this closed cabinet over here. I don't want to see it. I don't want to deal with it. We'll just kind of keep going with what we're going with. It could be scary. You know, maybe there's a lot of debt in that cabinet over there. Maybe there's a bunch of school loans that you haven't been dealing with, or maybe there's some other thing. But having a plan at least gives you some hope of, like, you know, we could maybe get out of this, or we maybe could if I just worked a few extra hours over here, I picked up a second job over here, or maybe if you got a job for just for a short season, maybe we could really kind of get ahead on these things. Maybe we could make some progress. Maybe we don't have to be so stressed out about this all the time. And maybe, you know, the word budget can go from all the negative things that we maybe think about it to, it could be a positive thing. Like, it gives you permission to spend, as one of the Ramsey personality people talks about. A budget gives you permission to spend. Because if we sit down and Brenda and I sit down and we come up with our budget and we write down all of our needs and all of our, you know, extra stuff and our wants and a few of these things, and I say, babe, look, we got $500 extra dollars this month. I want to go spend $500 on this, or you want to go spend $500 on that. Okay, well, we can figure that out. Like, as I told you, we're building a house. Like, so we just Monday night or Tuesday night, we sat down. I'm like, we got to make a list of all the stuff that we want to get for this house. Because when you get a new house, you got to get all the stuff, right? I need a mower for my new house. I got a big yard. I need a shed to put the mower in. And I need a pressure washer to clean off the mower when I'm done mowing. And I need, you know, all these things. These are not needs. These are wants, for sure. But we started making a list because she's going to want some new furniture for the house. And we're going to want to decorate this way or that way. And there's just things, right, that we want to get. So we made a list of all the things. And now we're in the process of putting those things in a certain order. Okay, if we could only have one of these things, what's the most important thing on this list? Okay, well, it's this. Okay, well, that goes at the top. How much, you know, if we had a little bit more money, what would be the next thing we would want? And the next thing. And you can do that with anything. You don't have to be building a house or buying a bunch of new stuff to do that. But you can do that with anything. Like, okay, we got to take care of our, you know, food and our house and our utilities and our car and get gas in it. Okay, we have enough money to cover all of that. We have $300 extra dollars. What do you want to do this month with this $300 extra dollars? Well, I'd really like to go get, you know, my hair done, or I really want to go buy something for the kids, or we should start saving some of that so we can go on a trip one of these days. Or I want to, eventually we need another car, so let's start putting away a little bit of that now. Or maybe we want our kids to go to college. Maybe we should put a little bit of money in there now. Let that start growing for them. You get to decide. The budget gives you permission to do all of those things, but you have to sit down and, like, think about it. Like, what do I actually want? And so that's a really important aspect budgeting. And so when you sit down for the first time maybe to do a budget, or maybe it's been a while since you've done a budget, you need to decide what's important. And this verse in Luke 12, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And so the things that you spend your money on say a lot about what is important to you. And so as I mentioned before, the one of the big reasons for divorce in America is fighting over money. And it's not really so much that the money is the problem. The money is the symptom of the problem, which is their values don't align, right? If I'm really, really passionate about getting out of debt, and Brenda is really, really passionate about spending every dime that we make, she's not, I'm not, by the way, but if that was the case we found ourselves in, that would be a conflict. Every time we talked about money, it would be a fight, because I'm trying to pull this way and get our family in a better position, and she's pulling the other way and trying to spend everything that we have, right? Or vice versa. It could be either way. I'm not picking on my wife, but like, there's a lot of marriages that are that way. And it's not because it's the money. It's the fact that they're not aligned on their value, because this verse right here tells us that what we spend our money on tells us what's important. So you could tell me it's really important for me that my kids have a good education. It's really important that my that my wife is able to stay home with our kids. It's really important for me that X, Y, and Z, fill in the blank, whatever you would tell me is important to you. But if you brought your bank statement, your credit card statement, or whatever you're spending, you know, out of, and I looked over that, I could probably tell you what I think your values are based on where your money's going. And I spent a lot of my time in banking sitting at a desk, printing out people's transaction history, going over all of it, because they have all these fees on there because they spent everything they had and more. Their account's overdrawn. They want us to fix it because it's not their fault. It's ours, you know. And I spent hours and hours and hours of my life sitting down with people and looking at this person who doesn't make very much money. They're living on disability or something like that. And they spend all their money at the casino, or they spend all their money. There was this one person that spent, I mean, a couple $1,000 a month on a game on their phone, and they were like in their 60s or 70s. They were a little bit older person, and they spent almost everything that they had on this video game on their phone. It was just like, I just sit there and say, what are you doing? You know, like, your account's overdrawn, you're asking about all these fees, and I'm looking at like $2,000 worth of, I don't know, whatever, Bejeweled or some silly game, and I'm like, what are you doing with all your money? You know, that was something that was important to that person. And that's kind of an extreme example, but if you went through your bank account and you looked and see, okay, what am I actually spending my money on? That's going to show you the things that are important to you. It's the same way with your time. If you were to sit down and write out, okay, what did I do today? I woke up at this time. I did this first, and then I did this. And you wrote down everything you did all day. It would show you what's important to you, right? It would show you what you value based on the way that you spent your time. And so if you were to go through my bank statement, look at all the things that I spent money on, as I mentioned, you'd see tithing, you'd see savings, you'd see mortgage, you'd see the responsible things, because it's important to me that I provide for my family, right? And we take care of our house, and we do those things, get the basics in place. But then, like I said, you'd also see Amazon, and you'd see Chipotle, or you'd see Culver's, or you'd see, you know, I don't know what you'd see exactly. You'd see all these kinds of transactions, right? And so some of that is necessity stuff. Some of it's wants. Some of it's maybe frivolous spending. Some of it's not, right? But you would see the majority. We take care of the things that are needs and the things that we value before we do everything else. So the budget that I gave you, at the top, it's got your income. You can list out your income. That's a budget form that I made in Excel like a decade ago. Probably we've been using it for a long time. Like I said, a few months ago, we switched to an online thing, but we used that form for years and years and years. But you put your income at the top, and I listed it in order of like importance. I got tithing on there. I've got bills. I've got a column for savings. Those are just some things that we saved for. But you can save obviously for whatever you want to save for. But just having a plan and having an idea of where your money's going, and recognizing that every time I swipe my card or every time I go online and buy something, I'm telling my spouse or I'm telling myself or I'm telling the Lord that this is something that's important to me. This is what I value. And if that's in place of paying your house payment or, you know, tithing to your church or saving for your kids, then like maybe that's out of order. Maybe that's out of whack. You know, maybe we need to readjust. And if it's just because you never really looked at it before, then okay, we can look at it and you can fix it and you can come up with a plan. Those kinds of things are really important. And I found this survey on creditcards.com. In 2022, they did a survey that said 23% of married couples keep their finances totally separate. An additional 34% of couples have a mix of joint and separate accounts. Maybe their paychecks go into their account, they transfer it to a joint, and they pay their bills out, something like that. So that's like 57% of couples. I'm surprised it's not a little higher, actually, but over half of married couples in America don't have shared finances, or at least don't have completely shared finances. In my opinion, that's a problem, right? Where our treasure is, there will our heart be also. The things that I spend my money on are show what is valuable to me. Same thing for my wife, same thing for all of you. And if we're not sharing that with our spouse, or they're blinded to what's important to us because they can't see what we're spending our money on, because I hear that a lot with people. It's like, well, I don't want her or him telling me what I can spend my money on. And it's like, that is the wrong perspective. It's not your money. It's God's money. If you're a Christian and you recognize that the only reason you have the money is because God blessed you with the job and the ability to get up and go do it every day and has blessed you with the ability to earn an income, we can't look at it that way. That's the backwards way of looking at it. And so somebody who's a good steward doesn't look at their money that way. They recognize, all I'm here to do is manage it. I'm like Luke at the church. All he does is process it. I see the money come in. I see the money go out. I don't make any decisions about it. I'm the steward. I'm the one who processes everything. But it's not my money. And so that's just a good perspective to look at. So I'm out of order on my slides here. So what do you value? I already talked about that. There's a list of just some things, some needs. There's some wants on the other side. We talked about that already, so I'm not going to spend a lot more time on that. Okay. Average household income in Cass County. This is for a household, not per person. So it's going to vary. This is average, though. For 1 year, average income in Cass County is $76,924. Some of us are like, man, that would be nice. And some of us are like, ooh, that would be tight, you know. So it's different depending on where you're at, but that's the average. So I want you to think about, in 1 year, that family has $76,000. The average person, average family in Cass County has $77,000 almost passed through their house. So after 10 years, they're going to have $769,000. This is assuming they didn't get a raise or no other variables changed. But in 10 years' time, they're going to have almost a little over three quarters of $1 million is going to come in and out of their house. And if you just do 40 years of working time from, 20 to 60 or however you want to figure it, 40 years in their lifetime, if they earn that the whole time, that's over $3 million passing through their hands, okay, or our hands, because we're average Cass County people, or some of you guys maybe, are all of you guys Cass County? Is everyone Cass County there? Yeah, okay. So we're all Cass County. So this is us. We are the average Cass County people. And so if we live in Cass County our whole life and we make an average income the whole time, we're going to have over $3 million pass through our hands. And that's kind of a sobering thought if you think about $3 million passing through your family's hands. And then we look at people that are of retirement age now that don't have any retirement. They haven't saved some of that money. Because they were, man, when you're in the fight and you're like in the daily grind of it and you got kids and you got jobs and you got someone gets hurt or my car engine blows up or I want to do this thing or I'm not intentional about that thing. And, you go through the grind, you look up after 10 years and you think, man, I've had $769,000 pass through my household. And, if you double that on that, if you had kids in your house for 20 years of that, you had $1.5 million pass through your family while your kids were in the house, and like, what do you have to show for that afterwards? And I don't mean these figures to like shame anybody. Like, if you don't have a $3 million in your bank account, then you're doing something wrong. Because obviously we're spending that on stuff, right? We're spending it on needs, and we're spending some of it on wants. But I think if you like step back and think about that figure and think about, like, how much money that is passing through us, and, like, do we even know where any of it went? You know, like, I mean, if you were to look back over the last year, maybe just 1 year, $77,000 passes through your family's hands. Like, what did you do with it? I mean, do you have anything to show for what you did? Now, you know, hopefully you have vacation memories, or you have a new couch or a new car, or you have some things to show for it. I'm not saying that there's nothing to show for it, but when you think about the figures, it can be really, like, sobering to think about how much money we truly do have that comes in and out of our house. This verse in Proverbs 23, verse 5, says, "Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away as an eagle toward heaven." If you don't have a plan, if you don't have a target that you're aiming at, it's going to fly like an eagle towards heaven. I mean, how many of us have felt like our money has flown out like an eagle toward heaven and we have no idea what happened to it? It just seems like it just goes, right? I mean, you go back and you look and you're like, we make too much money to not have anything left over at the end of the month. You know, I'm not asking for millions of dollars here, but why do we not have anything left in our bank account? And Brenda and I have been doing this. Taxes. Brenda and I have been doing this, like I said, for like 15 years. And, you know, there's months fairly recently where we're like, I feel like we should have money left over. Like, what happened to the extra money? We did the budget. We thought we had it all down, and oh yeah, we forgot about this thing or that thing, or oh, we were behind from last month or whatever. You know, like things come up. But it really speaks. That verse really speaks to, like, the average American today. We as a culture, as a society, do not really do a very good job of aiming at something when it comes to our finances. And oftentimes those finances have a way of kind of just floating off, and we're left like looking around like where they went. And so so I want to kind of wrap up with a little bit about what's on your handout. Is there one more blank on your handout in that box at the bottom? What's the last box? Okay, is that in the box? Okay, I thought there was another one. Wants versus needs. Sorry. I skipped over that because I was ahead in my notes and I was behind on my slides. So wants versus needs. What's that? Wants versus needs. What'd you say? What do you value? Yes, what do you value? Okay, so homework. I have a little bit of homework. So we're gonna do 5 weeks on this. The last week is April the 3rd, which conveniently falls right after the first of the month. So my goal for all of us, myself included, is that we have a budget done before April 1st. So we've got like 4 weeks to get a budget done. There's a sample budget in there. You can use that. You can make up your own. You can write it down on paper. You can put it in a computer. Obviously, I'm not going to be like grading these or checking these. If you're in D2, Jason might grade them. I don't know what his plan is, but I'm not going to be looking at them. I don't care if you – I do care if you do it, but it's not going to hurt my feelings if you don't do it. But my goal is to get us to where we're all doing a budget, at least to try it. And I will tell you that they say on average it takes about 3 months to get a budget, or 3 months of like doing a budget to actually figure it out. Because the first month, you're going to way over budget on certain things. You're going to way under budget on other things because you don't really know what you've been spending money on. And so it's going to be a little bit difficult for those first couple months to nail it down. But that is why I have the other part of your homework, which is to go back, just as an exercise, to go back in the month of February, or January if you want, or last year, however you want to do it. But it'd be easiest probably to just do 1 month. So pick February. It's a short month, so there'll be a few less transactions. And just look through your bank statement or your credit card statement or a combination of both, and just see what you spent your money on. And see if you can remember. We budget pretty consistently, and we still will go back and look, and I'm like, what did we buy at fill in the blank thing? If it's online, you can usually go back and like log into your account and it'll tell you what you bought. But if you go to, like, we go to Walmart and I'm like, what did we buy for $72.18 at Walmart? And it's like, I cannot remember. Huh? Pack of gum. Yeah. So some of you are going to look at it and you're going to be like, I really don't remember. I'm going to say that was probably groceries, or I'm going to say it was probably this or that. But if you keep your receipts, you're like way on top of the game. Brenda kind of keeps the receipts, I think, most of the time for stuff. She's got a little folder that she puts it in. Mine ends up in the floorboard of my car until a few days build up, and then I clean it out, throw it away. My kids step on them and rip them all up, and then I eventually clean them out. But I do not do a good job keeping track of receipts. But if you do that, that would be one way you could go back and see. But just as an exercise to see what you actually have been spending your money on, just in the last 30 days or so. Again, it's not to shame or to make you feel like, man, I wasted all this money. But if you can look at it on a small scale, let's say you make the average salary of $76,000 or $77,000, right? That's a little over $6,000 a month. That's before taxes and health insurance and that kind of stuff comes out of your check, 401ks or whatever you're putting your money in. So that's not what you bring home. But just say you have, you know, $5,000 coming home. It would be good for you to know on a small scale, on a $5,000 month scale or a $4,000 month scale, where did all that money go? And then you can kind of extrapolate it out over the year and say, it'd be really nice if we could go on a vacation. Well, how much is that going to cost? Well, it's going to cost $3,000. Okay, well, how much do we need to save per month if we want to go on that vacation next year? Well, that's about $300 a month. It'll get you $3,600, you know, and you could save up and you could go on that trip. Or you could buy that bigger, expensive thing that you're wanting to buy. But I think it's just a good exercise for us to think about and look at the things that we've spent our money on and to just have an idea of where it all goes, because otherwise it is going to end up flying away like an eagle toward heaven. We finished 12 minutes early, except we have some questions. Yes, sir. So I use Every Dollar. So it's a Dave Ramsey thing. I think we paid $70 for the year. It links to your bank account. So like when I swipe my card the next day or 2 days later, that transaction is in Every Dollar. And then I can just drag and drop it. Oh, that was groceries. That was gas. Or I can split it up and say, I went to Walmart and I bought some groceries and I bought some medication. So I can split it if I wanted to. So we use Every Dollar. There's a free version of it where you just input your own transactions. But it works. It works pretty good. We like it. When it syncs to your bank account every once in a while, it like logs me out of my bank account. I got to re-log in and resync everything. So emergency fund is a savings account. Yeah. So for us personally, we do, he has another thing called sinking funds where, let's say Christmas is coming up in December as it usually does. And let's say you want to have some money to be able to buy Christmas presents for your kids or your parents or your spouse or whatever. And I want to spend $500 on Christmas this year. You know, I'm going to need to put away money throughout the year in order to do that. So Brenda and I, not for Christmas specifically, but for property taxes, for our car insurance, we pay our car insurance every 6 months, and that's usually a decent sized bill. So we put away money in cash in an envelope every month and save that up for 6 months or a year or whenever the bill comes due. So when the bill comes due, like life insurance is another one, when the bill comes due, it's like, oh, this $300 bill, we have $300 here, we put it in our account, pay the bill, and it takes care of it that way. So savings is, that's another thing we do with savings accounts. That's why I have multiple different savings accounts listed on there. Saving for an emergency fund is great. We'll talk more about like the logistics of like filling out a budget probably next time. So just making a list of what you want to do with your money and how to, because a lot of you will have, you know, credit card payments and car payments and other kinds of debt payments and stuff on there. So that's obviously going to eat up a lot of stuff. So Dave Ramsey's process of getting out of debt is he has a step where you put $1,000 in a savings account. So you save up that just as a little bit of a cushion in case, you know, flat tire or something bad happens, you know, you need it. And then at that point, then it's get rid of all your debt. Start with the lowest one and kind of work your way up. We'll talk a little bit more about that as we go. And then once you're done with all your debt, then you get an emergency fund, like 3 to 6 months of expenses saved up. And then after that, you start doing some investing. We'll probably talk about investing like the last week. We'll get an investing and some insurance, car insurance, life insurance, some stuff like that. We'll talk about that kind of at the end. So, Belinda, did you raise your hand a minute ago? I thought somebody else raised their hand. Anybody else have any questions? Yes, sir. Here, hold on. Let me grab this because nobody online can hear you, and they're like, "Who's saying what?"
Talking about tithing, when we're sitting at the beginning of baby step one with Dave Ramsey, you know, as a church, do you still tithe when you're trying to do the snowball effect, or is it like I know it's God's money, but to get to the point where you can tithe your 10%, is that, do you put that on hold or do you continue tithing even though you're still throwing all your money at debt and all that?
So I would say you still tithe. We did when we were in debt. We still tithe the whole time, all the way through. Obviously, it slows down. I mean, if you're given, let's say you make the average salary $6,000, you're given $600 a month to the church as a tithe, that is going to slow you down by $600 a month on getting out of debt or saving up in a, you know, money in a savings account. But more important, I think, than just the like the dollars and cents of it is like building up that muscle. So maybe you haven't ever tithed before, and this is like a new concept, and you've never budgeted before, and you're in all this debt. You think, okay, I'm just going to start with $50 a paycheck or $50 a month, and I'm just going to be faithful with that, and I'm just going to see what God does. Like faithful with least, faithful with much. I can tell you stories, and I probably will tell you stories of times where. So we got married in 2006. I had been working at Walmart before that, and we got married. We moved to Phoenix. We did not have a lot of money. She was working as a waitress, and I was working at a cell phone store making, like, minimum wage. And my mom mailed me this check for, like, I think it was, like, $400-some-odd from Walmart, and it was this check from – it was my very first paycheck from, like, 5 years before that, that I guess it was before my direct deposit went in or something. So Walmart just had this check for $400-some-odd that just never went in. And so my mom mailed it. She's like, hey, this check came in the mail for you today, and it's like your first paycheck from 7 years ago or whatever it was. And it was just like in a time where we were just like, I think it was right around the time we started budgeting. It was like, oh, we're being faithful finally with our finances, and this random check shows up. And I'm not saying that God's just going to, you know, give you back, you know, whatever money you give him. But my dad's told me stories over the years of just being faithful with tithing and how God is, you know, given something that just ended up being exactly what they started tithing, you know, the additional money they started tithing. It's like, boom, here's a little bit of a raise from your job that you weren't expecting. And it's weird how it just meets that exact same amount that I just committed to give. And so just exercising the muscle of giving a little bit until you can give a lot is great. If you want to tithe the whole 10% the whole time, that's excellent as well. If you say for 6 months or for a year, we're just going to buckle down and we're not going to tithe. And I know that's not what we're supposed to do, but that's a decision we're going to make. Like, I mean, it's a personal decision for you, but I would say, yeah, I did personally tithe through the debt that we had. Yes, sir. Pass him, get that mic behind you, Larry.
I can remember when I was going to church with my aunt and uncle, she used to give me a quarter every Sunday to put in the collection plate. Mm-hmm. And then it went from a quarter to 50 cents, 50 cents to 75 cents, 75 cents to a dollar. So, you know, yeah, that's back.
That's inflation.
That's back late 70s, early 80s, yeah. You know. But now you're giving 10% of what you make. Mm-hmm. That's a lot, you know?
Yep.
So that's basically what I did was a quarter a week. That's what she'd give me was a quarter a week. She said, here, put this in the collection plate.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, we tried to do the same kind of thing with our kids just to start getting that muscle. My very first job at 15, I remember tithing off of that. I don't, you know, God's my witness here. I don't think there's been a paycheck that we've not tithed on or I've not tithed on in my lifetime. I just, you know, whether it's, you know, monthly or biweekly or however we've done it, you know, that's just been a muscle that we've always kind of exercised. So with our kids, you know, they get money for doing jobs around the house, dishes and trash and stuff like that. And the expectation is 10% of what we're giving you, you know, we want you to give it to the church. We don't like make them. We're not, you know, I mean, we do ask them and remind them, hey, make sure you bring your wallet or your dollar bill or whatever you're bringing. But you know, we're not like legalistic about it, but we do try to exercise that muscle in them at, you know, a young age. So they just kind of get used to, okay, I'm going to live off of 90% of my income because 10% of it, I mean, 100% of it belongs to God already anyways, but I'm just recognizing now that 10% of it, I'm going to physically make sure I give it back to him and then I'll live on the rest of it after that. So, that's how we've done it, with our kids, just to kind of start exercising that muscle. I don't remember my parents giving me money to give to the church or anything like that. But I do remember, obviously, them telling me, this is something you should do. This is something that we do. With my kids, we we don't sit down and show them our whole budget, or they don't like look at our bank accounts or anything with us. But we do talk about budgeting, like not like every day or anything, but we kind of bring it up with them every once in a while. And we talk about, you know, yes, we're here. You know, we're giving for this, or hey, we can't. I went to breakfast with my son at school this morning. They had a donuts thing with donuts with grown-ups. And so I went there and he's like, can we go to the book fair? And I'm like, no, we're not, you know, we're trying to save up money for the house. Like, we're not going to go and buy a bunch of these books at the book fair right now. But, you know, in the past, we have bought books at the book fair. I don't have a problem with the book fair. But, you know, they understand, like, okay, we have a goal that we're working towards as a family. And that's, you know, that's the goal right now. And then once we're in the house, we'll have a different goal of some kind. And so, but talking about those things, I think, earlier on helps. Even like the practice that your aunt was doing with you, you know, you still remember that. And hopefully it's, you know, kind of continued through your adult life and started you out as a young kid. So anybody else have questions? All right. We're going to be out of here on time by 2 minutes early, I think. Let's pray. And then if anybody has any more questions afterwards, they can ask me, or we'll be doing this for the next few weeks. So if you come up with questions along the way, or you sit down and do your budget, or you look at your bank statement and you're like, oh my gosh, I was out of whack, or hey, I actually was doing better than I thought, you know, talk to me about that or ask questions about it afterwards. So let's pray. Dear Lord God, thank you for this evening, God. Just thank you for just a place that we can come and talk about the subject of finances. And God, it can be a difficult topic for people to discuss. And I know it's not something that is maybe openly discussed everywhere, but God, I thank you for your word. And God, we know that it's important to you, and it's something that you value, because you've talked about it so much in your word. And God, we do want to be good stewards. I pray that you would just help us to be faithful wherever we're at, God, whether it's a quarter that we're putting in the plate, or it's thousands of dollars we're putting in the plate. God, I pray that you would just help us to be faithful with the little things, and God, that you would just give us more, God, and whether that's money just resources or responsibility, God, I pray that you would just help us to do the little things, and so we can be trusted with the bigger things. And just thank you for an opportunity to go through your word tonight and talk about this, and pray that you would just help us to go forth, God, and help these conversations between spouses, that they would just not be contentious, God, and that they would be edifying, and that we can really start to think about the things that we value as a family, and God, the things that we value as a church body. I know when we do our budgets here at church, God, we think about the things that are important to you, and we try to spend our money in those areas. And so I just ask that you help us to be wise stewards and good stewards of the things that you've given us, and just ask your blessing on the rest of our evening. In Jesus' name, amen.